Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Peds and Q's. Today we have an awesome guest, Dr. Rushika Conroy. She is a pediatric endocrinologist, and she is a board-certified physician in obesity medicine. And before we bring her on, obviously, I just have to give my disclaimer. We are not your doctors. We are here to educate. However, if you want specific advice, please contact your doctor. And here we have Rushika.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Rushika, can we start with talking about type 2 diabetes?
Sure. So type 2 diabetes is something that I think most of us in the past thought was an adult disease. It was associated with older age, people who were overweight or had obesity, unhealthy diet, lack of exercise, and definitely something that people got as they got older. And since the number of kids and teenagers with obesity has risen over the decades, we've seen an increase in these kids getting type 2 diabetes as well. And I think what's really scary for us as doctors who are treating these kids is that they're developing complications of their type 2 diabetes really early. They're diagnosed at 12 and having complications when they're 18, 19, 20. And it's decreasing their life expectancy by up to a decade. So it's a really aggressive disease in these younger kids. And it's been really hard for us to effectively manage it.
Can you talk a little bit about what the complications are?
Sure. So I think, when people Google type 2 diabetes complications, I think they end up seeing the really scary things like loss of limbs and amputations. And those tend to be because of vascular complications. So having a lot of extra sugar in the bloodstream can make it hard for nutrients and oxygen to get delivered to certain parts of the body. And so without oxygen and nutrients, those body parts can die. And so we see it most often in the in the lower limbs, like in the toes and feet first. So one of the complications is you can have a loss of function, loss of feeling in those places, and so they can have to be removed or amputated. One of the things that we're seeing, unfortunately, pretty frequently with our kids is nephropathy, which is problems with your kidneys because of the extra sugar. So the extra sugar is supposed to be filtered and processed in your kidneys to help keep things balanced. And when there's too much sugar getting into the kidneys, it overwhelms them and they stop being able to function properly. And so that can start pretty quickly after you're diagnosed. And if your diabetes is not well controlled, it can progress to the point that your kidneys are failing and you end up needing to be on dialysis or needing a transplant. The other thing that we're seeing is retinopathy, which is eye disease from diabetes. And that can also start early if the diabetes is not well controlled. And if it continues, can progress to blindness. So they're pretty scary complications that can happen, especially to these younger kids.
What's it like to be a parent of kids with type 2 diabetes?
I think it's a mixed set of feelings. I think a lot of our parents feel like they know the disease because more often than not, there is a member or there are members of that child's family who have type 2 diabetes and have been dealing with it for a number of years. And so oftentimes the family feels like they know and understand the disease, and they feel pretty comfortable with how it's managed, not realizing that the management, because it's so much more aggressive in kids, they don't realize that the management is actually very different. And then I think on the other side, the parents can feel really overwhelmed with the disease. In order to treat it, oftentimes these kids are on injections. They're having to check their blood sugars and deal with any other problems that they might have that are related to their diabetes or to their obesity. So it can become really overwhelming for families to try to properly manage their child.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't have kids with type 2 diabetes. I don't think you do either.
No.
Can you talk about, first of all, I know you wrote a book, which I love.
Thank you.
And I plan to keep this in my office so I can lend it out to people.
That's great. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I'll put my name on it so it doesn't get stolen, obviously. What made you decide to write this book?
So it's interesting because I started writing it during COVID. And it was because when the pandemic started, we found that the number of kids who had developed obesity had skyrocketed.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I mean, for adults, the same thing happened, right? Like everybody's right. home, nobody's moving, you're stress eating, you're boredom eating. I mean, I think everybody seems to have gained some amount of COVID weight, you know?
Of course.
And, but with the kids, we were seeing that the weight gain was really pretty high, you know, kids gaining 30, 40, 50 pounds in a year. And, you know, like I said, part of it was a change in food intake, the activity, the stress of COVID and how it might have impacted their family dynamics. And with that, we saw about, I think it was 150% increase in
wow.
the type 2 diabetes cases. You know, we used to see, I would say, about one patient newly diagnosed with type 2 diabetes per month.
Uh-huh.
And it started becoming one per week pretty consistently, and then even like one or two per week. And when we were talking to these families about, you know, your child has type 2 diabetes and this is what needs to happen, the initial response was, oh, yep. I have type 2 diabetes. Dad has type 2 diabetes. Like, we know
right.
we just have to change our diet a little bit.
Right.
Take some metformin, no big deal. And what would end up happening is they'd, you know, kind of almost like poo-poo it and
right.
be like, I got this. And then they'd show up 3 months later and their blood sugars are, you know, too high for the meter to read. And
yeah.
now we're having to put them on, you know, multiple daily injections of insulin. And, you know, they've developed complications from their diabetes. And I realized there was a huge, education gap there. And like, maybe we weren't doing a good job of explaining to the families just how different the disease is from what they know for themselves or for their like adult family members. And it's also a lot of information to digest in, you know, a couple of visits with a nurse educator and with a physician. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to write it all out. And I
yeah.
said, I'm just going to, you know, write a book that's easy to read and kind of explains everything and also goes through like, why do we even care about the diabetes? What are we talking about when we say things like A1C and meter? And, you know,
right.
what are these complications we keep mentioning? And, you know,
right.
why do they poke my finger at every visit? But just even some of those basics, because I feel like a lot of that stuff we know, and we kind of assume the family might know, but oftentimes they don't. Like even
right.
even some of those very, like, you know, very basic things that we take for granted and assume people know. So I wanted to kind of get it all out there and in a language that was easy to understand. And so, yeah, so then I wrote the book, and I got a great person to do my illustrations. She's actually the daughter of one of the nurses I work with. So it was awesome. Yeah. So it worked out really nicely.
Oh, that's lovely. So how does one get your book?
So right now, the only way to get it is off of Amazon. Mm-hmm. So if you go into Amazon and type in, type 2 diabetes parents, it'll pop up. Mm-hmm. Or the you could put the whole name of the book in, but it's probably just easier to do that. Type 2 diabetes parents, and the link will pop up and you can order it. And it's short. I didn't want to make it so long that people would, use it as the thing to help them fall asleep. So I tried to make it nice and quick and easy.
Right. Yeah. No, I appreciated that it was in very basic language, anyone could read, even a teenager could read it and understand it. I appreciated that it was quick. It's kind of an enjoyable book to read because I don't know. It was just very enjoyable. I learned a lot, actually. So, I'm so glad you wrote it.
Oh, thank you. That's great. And I've definitely given it to some of the teenagers, too, just because I feel like they're old enough that they can read it and kind of understand what's going on for themselves. And so I think that's been helpful too.
Yeah. Okay. So you're a pediatric endocrinologist. You help people that have obesity. What else would you like to tell our audience about? So our audience is parents, families, caregivers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think right now, one of the things that's, getting a lot of press is obesity medication, as well as some of the guidelines that have come out from the American Academy of Pediatrics for how to treat children and adolescents with obesity.
Yeah.
And there have definitely been a lot of responses, both positive and negative, for the guidelines. The guidelines are pretty aggressive compared to what they've been in the past, where they're really pushing for, diagnosis, pushing for looking into alternate causes of the obesity when applicable, encouraging a lot of dietary modification and exercise, but also when that's not working, being pretty quick to jump to a plan B of medication or plan C, even of weight loss surgery.
Right.
And I think it's made people pretty nervous about a couple of things. One is that will this trigger eating disorders among kids who are struggling with overweight or obesity? Is it going to do more harm to someone's self-image if they're, are we body shaming because now they're made to think that their obesity is a bad thing? And so that's where a lot of the negative comments have come.
Yeah.
And I think, and all of those points are really good ones. And I totally value people's opinions on that. But I do think that it's hard because what we see are these kids who are 9, 10, 11 years old, who are 200, 250 pounds and struggling with these illnesses. I think when we're looking at these recommendations and these guidelines, I think we're less looking at the kid who might be, just over the 96th percentile for BMI with maybe 5 pounds more than what they should be. We're really looking at the kids who are,
Who need help.
100 pounds more. Right.
Really
and I feel
help.
Like somewhere that got lost in the guidelines. And so, and you know, we do, even with kids at those higher weights, we do find that there are a number of them who do develop disordered eating, and it's become a real challenge to treat. And it's something that we have to keep monitoring for and trying to stay ahead of. But I think we have to look at that bigger picture of, you know, the fact that 20% of our, you know, children in America are struggling with obesity, and 6% of them have severe obesity, where they're in that needing to lose like 100+ pound range. And so I think that's where the guidelines were kind of focusing on, and maybe that got missed a bit. I do think, though, it's also important to understand, for families to understand, that obesity is a disease. It is not a lifestyle choice. It's not a lack of willpower. It is a disease, and it's recognized as a disease by a number of medical societies. And it's important that we treat it as a disease and make sure we address it and, you know, give it that same amount of respect that we would to any other disease, and not, you know, kind of brush it off because it's, you know, that person should be able to lose weight by just eating less.
Right. Like, not shame anyone. I find that there's a lot of shame, you know, even just bringing it up, you know, people are embarrassed, and I understand. I mean, we all know what shame feels like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, people get defensive. People, you know, the parents will feel like, their doctors are coming down on them. Mm-hmm. You know, why did you let your child get this way? You know, kind of a thing. And that's where, you know, it's on us as physicians to make sure that when we approach it, that there is none of that kind of inherent bias in our minds about, you know, how the disease develops, and making sure that we, you know, don't just say the words, but then also don't have that, you know, in the way that we say it, don't make it seem like we're judging.
Right.
Because then you're not going to get anywhere.
Exactly.
Right?
Like,
you're not going to build that relationship where that person will trust you and work with you, you know, to help that child.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I learned a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. And I'm excited to be a part of this. And I congratulate you on doing such a great job with these podcasts.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.